Please be seated. A door has opened, and we now stand at the threshold of installing this minister to this congregation. Do you hear the voice? Do you hear the voice calling us to do this? In my ear, it's a voice that's both consoling but also challenging. And it's a voice that's from another order, and yet it's irrepressibly human. So what should we do? We could do like Moses and pretend that the voice is actually for some other congregation, some other minister. Or we can do this thing and pass through this threshold that asks us today to make, receive, and witness large promises. Actually, by our gathering here, we have already made our choice. We seal here our intention that this shared ministry shall grow as love itself. So let us enter into that worshipful space, for it is in worship that we find the cradle for this and all of our common covenants.
Before we light the chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist tradition, we share these words adapted from Eric Heller Wagner.
Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul.
It is the flame of the human spirit touched into being by the mystery of life.
It is the fire of reason.
The fire of compassion.
The fire of community.
The fire of justice.
The fire of faith.
It is the fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the divine glow in every life.
May it kindle in us the fire of commitment to live out our mission of love in the world.
I bring greetings from the Unitarian Universalist Association and the staff of the Southern Region of our association. For 62 years, this congregation has been a vibrant part of what is now over 1,000 congregations in our association. On behalf of those, your sibling congregations, and our Unitarian Universalist Association, I offer heartfelt congratulations to both Reverend Emily Wright Magoon and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland. We wish you well in your shared ministry.
On behalf of the clergy of this community, we want to thank you for your discernment and your choice. Having Emily come to our community. We are proud and pleased to be in ministry with her and continue to look forward to her leadership among the entire community.
Please join me in our responsive reading by reading the italicized words in your order of service. Don't leave your broken heart at the door. Don't leave your anger behind.
It has high standards, and the world needs vision.
Bring them with you.
And your joy and your passion.
Bring your loving.
And your courage and your conviction.
Bring your need for healing.
And your powers to heal.
There is work to do.
So what people don't tell you is that the best thing about being a minister is on occasions like this, I get to see everybody's faces. So you'll have to just trust me. Y'all are just, oh my gosh, I used y'all. I've been in Texas for a day. But you all are just beautiful. And I can't help but think of that old ancient Hebrew blessing where the Lord lifts their countenance, because I see here the holy, for I believe in our tradition the holy is always just as we are here, both singular and plural. And what a beautiful but also unlikely thing that we should be gathered here like this. For one, it is miracle enough that we survived to this moment. But think of all of the separate lives we've come from and the many things that might have prevented us from gathering together in this moment. But this gathering itself, it is a special revelation. It is only what it could be. It could only be this day. It could only be Emily's installation as your settled minister. When I think about the power of this singular plural, there's a Persian tale from the 13th century that I like very much that helps express this. And so I need you to imagine deeply that the birds are in a time of economic struggle, and the birds are in a time where it's time to elect a new leader, and they have concerns about their choices. It's hard to put yourself back into that 13th century Persia, right? It's so hard to relate to. And so the birds in their distress, they've gathered and they've realized they don't have anybody that they can elect. What will they do? So they decide to consult King Solomon's own bird, the hoopoe, who, according to legend, whispered many of the wise things that Solomon said into his ear. So they consult the hoopoe, and the hoopoe says, "Fear not, I know of the leader you seek. There is a bird who can be all you need him to be. His name is the Simbird, and he is golden, and he is magnificent, and he is wise, and you can seek him in the lands of the Far East." So the birds quickly decide that they should take this journey to find this magnificent golden leader. But when it comes time to find volunteers to actually take the trip, each bird, one by one, declines to go. The hawk says, "Why should I go? I'm a friend of powerful men and generals. Why should I surrender the power I have for this kind of uncertainty?" The duck says, "Why should I go? I require water to survive. Here I know where my sources are. How could I survive that kind of uncertainty of a journey?" And Peacock says, "I know I'm a kept bird, but I am kept in beauty." So one by one, each of the birds declines, but then the wise hoopoe consults each bird individually, and in their own language, he gives them the same message. He tells them that a life lived deeply, that a life chosen in and through love is never easy, but that it's always better. He says, "So why would you surrender a little piece of dew when you could have the ocean itself, or Why would you settle for a mote of dust in the sunbeam when you could be the sun? So the birds decide to go, and they begin their harsh journey, and birds are lost along the way. But eventually they do make it to that far eastern land where they've been promised to find this golden, magnificent bird that will save them. So they get to that land and they look high and low. They can find no trace. They can find no golden feathers. They can't even find local birds who have seen this magnificent bird. So they decide that their journey has been for naught. And so in grief, as the sun is going down, they gather on the shore of the lake to decide what to do next. So the sun is setting on the lake and it's casting a golden reflection onto the lake. And the birds are all assembled there along the beach. And when they look into the sun and when they look upon the lake, they see the bird for which they have been looking. They see Simberg, the magnificent golden leader, in their own reflection as a singular plural entity brought together by that very journey that was so difficult. And actually, in Persian, Simberg is actually a little bit of a pun for 30 birds. So, boy, these are difficult times, and yet what amazing power there is in beings who are willing to see the holy in each other and take some risks and love a little more. I suppose we've all had our own moments where we felt that things were going in a direction that just was not okay. For me, it was a small and a very large thing that kind of nudged my conscience. It was actually a robbery near my home at a mini-mart, a gas station mini-mart. This happened actually about exactly a year ago, and it was just the teeniest little notice in the paper. I almost didn't even read it. And the story couldn't have been more common. A man stopped at the gas station mini-mart. He took a six-pack of beer, and then he was fleeing towards his car with his back to the mini-mart when someone with a concealed handgun permit actually shot him in the back as he was fleeing with the six-pack of beer. What amazed me about this was not only that, but the final sentence of the newspaper article, which explained that the police responded by simply taking the man who had shot the gun, taking the gun away from him and sending him home. We live in a world where you can attempt murder at the Speedway mini-mart and be home in time for dinner, but I'm sure the only reason this story struck me as hard as it did is I remembered exactly the last time I brought gas at that particular station. But first I should just tell you a little bit about what it's like to buy gas inside of my personal identity, okay? So I'm a female-identified middle-class white person who drives an aged Prius. When I buy gas, no one sees a thing. You know how they have all those Facebook quizzes about what your magic power is? Oh, I know my magic power. I'm invisible. You know, and in retail stores, my power just reaches an unbelievable height. You know, there I am. I whisk in. 8 gallons of unleaded are gone, and no one has seen one blessed thing. But it's not that way for everyone. That story about the Speedway Mini-Mart really struck me because the last time I had gone to that gas station, it was on my way to meet my friend Sheikh Tahir Watt, a brown man who dresses in Islamic garb. And I couldn't get out of my head what would have happened if the gun, the gas station, the Mini-Mart, I and Sheikh Tahir had all been part of the same equation. I don't know what would have happened, but I'm sure all of us would not have been home in time for dinner. So I should tell you just a teeny bit about my friend Sheikh Tahir Watt. He's the English language imam at the Prophet's Mosque in Medina, Saudi Arabia. He is here, and he was here to visit me because, get this, he is studying Unitarian Universalist history. I actually think it's possible that the person right now alive in the world who knows the most about Unitarian Universalist history is a sheikh in Saudi Arabia. The depth of his learning is just amazing. So why is Tahir studying Unitarian Universalist history? Because he is so concerned that the radicalization of Islam happens when Americans in particular are ignorant about Islam. And so he wants to teach the peace-giving message of his faith. But he's concerned that America's not ready to listen to a brown man from the Middle East to give this message. So friends, he's hoping that we will be the bridge. Wow. So I tell you this story only because I want you to know that there are more people waiting for Unitarian Universalism than we will ever know. There are more people who need our message and our action more than we will ever realize. And I don't know your local setting enough to know exactly what form that ministry might take here, but I know the world needs it. The world is waiting for us to take this great, big, giant, magnificent, golden bird of Unitarian Universalism and get it off the ground. So what will this take? Well, it takes a congregation. It takes a singular plural. And inside of that singular plural, there are different jobs, though, right? So in the story I told you, there are different birds with different attributes who do different things. So Emily's her own kind of bird in this story. Emily, as your chosen minister, she in some ways is our friend the hoopoo. She is your pastor. She is there to whisper into your ear when you are frightened that truth, that choosing love is not always difficult, but it is better. She is there to remind you of that as you take whatever journey lies ahead for you, individually and collectively. And also, Emily is a bird who is made an expert in reflective surfaces, right? So what the bird story took was for there to be some way to reflect back to people how beautiful they looked as a collective body. Emily knows all about those sources. She's got the wisdom of the world's traditions that help us do that. She has her own living history as Unitarian Universalists. She even can, if she needs to, she might suggest y'all go down to the lake and look into the waters. She has as a resource a knowledge of our polity, which gives shared power to this collective entity that we are. So these are all gifts that she brings. And even, this is another little truth about ministry. Even if that reflective surface, that mirror gets kind of fogged up because we're having a lot of kind of hot and heavy conversation, Emily's got some Windex and some wipes, I promise. So you're so lucky, because Emily is just great with all of that. She is great with the whispering the message of courage and love in the ear, and she's great with the wisdom of reflection. But guess what? This is going to take all of you. Today, it's not just Emily that makes a vow. We each make and renew our own vows. The fact of the matter is that as Unitarian Universalists, finally we believe that the most basic and primary religious vocation is something that belongs to each and every one of us. The times themselves lay the hand of religious vocation on each of us. So, this will require you to stand close enough together and with each other enough that we can recognize you as a body when the world is looking at you and when you're looking into that reflective surface. this is going to require that you too manifest a willingness to see the holiness in Emily and in each other and in what you can be together. The journey will take all of you. But I'm truly excited to be here to bless this first beginning step, because I know it's going to be absolutely magnificent. You're going to be so much huger, so much more golden, and so much more magnificent than you ever imagined.
I bring to you a warm and hearty howdy from your sibling Unitarian Universalist congregation in College Station, Texas. Last night, after meeting some members of your church, I started poking around your congregation's website. It's an occupational hazard, I admit that. You have words like welcoming diversity, empowering spiritual growth, fostering the interdependent web, and transforming lives. It's right there on the front page of your website. What exactly is this? I confirmed with Emily that it is your mission statement, in fact. And I want to tell you I know of a very simple way for you to live into your mission statement. And it can be found in your wallets and in your checkbooks. The Living Tradition Fund was created in 1988 at our denomination's General Assembly, expressing the wish that ordination and installation services held in member societies include an offering to this fund. The purpose of this fund is to provide assistance for religious professionals, need-based scholarships for theological students who have completed a full year of theological education, new minister assistance to reduce the burden of high educational debt and repayment, grants to ministers for emergency assistance. Funds that I have received from this fund allowed me to take 3 classes in seminary. It also provided me emergency assistance recently. I have also given to this fund. By giving to this fund this afternoon here in Midland, Texas, you are helping Unitarian Universalist ministers and seminarians across our denomination learn, thrive, and even survive. If you are planning to reach into your wallet, I ask you to find a few more bills and perhaps double what you were thinking of giving. May this afternoon's offering help strengthen the bonds between our congregations and ministers, as this ceremony today also symbolizes. Let this afternoon's offering be joyfully given and gratefully received.
We gather to install Reverend Emily Wright Magoon as minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland. In doing so, we rededicate ourselves to the values of this religious community and the liberal religious tradition of which it is a part. For Unitarian Universalists, the relationship we here recognize lies between congregation and minister. We enter into a covenant, pledging mutual respect and collaboration, openness and trust. Now, on this day, we install you, Emily, as our minister, to live and serve, to learn and love with us. Are you ready and willing to undertake the commitments of this ministry? Will the members of the congregation please rise now and read responsibly with me the words for the act of installation from the order of service? We cherish our congregation for its historical achievements, for those who funded and nurtured it,
and for those who again and again have faithfully transformed it when our mission called us to do so.
We celebrate this congregation's call
to welcome diversity, empower spiritual growth, foster the interdependent web, and transform our lives.
We cherish our church and our community for what it is, in accordance with the practice of our tradition. We would have you dwell among us, speaking your truth to us and listening to our truth. And leading us in our commitment to the life of principled action.
We also acknowledge the call of shared ministry and pledge to you our support and collaboration.
Emily, are you ready and willing to enter into this ministry among us? And let the people say, Amen, blessed be, namaste. Emily, I would like to present you with a gift from the congregation as well.
Occasions such as these are when I'm most grateful for our covenantal congregational way of doing church and our historic belief in what used to be called the priesthood of all believers. You do not need a priest or a bishop or a denominational body to consecrate Emily as your minister. You and all of you are the ones who will bless her and each other, and the shared ministry upon which you embark on this day. So I'd like for Sally to come up first, please. Your left hand on the shoulder. And now will the members of the congregation please come, touching the shoulder, stand up, come forward, touching the shoulder of the person next to you.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, make a long line, a chain. Yes, and they, oh yeah. Yeah, come on and forward, touch Emily. Get as close as you can. And now will everyone else please stand and touch the shoulder of a person close to you, so that we'll make a long chain, all of us connected. As we stand shoulder to shoulder and connected heart to heart, we acknowledge a great cloud of witnesses that stand with us. All those known and unknown, present and absent, remembered and forgotten, who brought Emily, this congregation, and our faith to this point in history. inheritors and practitioners of a living tradition dedicated to building the beloved community in freedom and with love. So now I ask you to please raise your other hand in blessing to Emily and pray with me. Spirit of life and love, we give thanks for your presence here now, moving in and among us as Emily enters into covenant with this congregation, with Unitarian Universalism, and with you, beloved presence. She comes ready to devote herself to the work of helping bring more justice and more compassion, more love, and more peace to the people of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Midland, and indeed to the people of all the Permian Basin, our state, our nation, and our world. We know Emily enters into this covenant equipped with the intellect and the education, the skills and the abilities, the character and the heart to do this work well. Give her strength of body, mind, and spirit she will need to fulfill the promise of her ministry here. Bless Emily on this joyful day of hope and great expectations, and on all the days to come. When she's weary and when she stumbles, lift her up. When disappointments and heartaches come, remind her of the love that flows through all of creation, which is hers for the taking. And bless us all, loving spirit, as we support her and work among her and help create the world of our noblest hopes and our sweetest dreams. And now, having offered our blessing to Emily, will you all turn and face the outside, the door? And Emily, will you raise your hand in blessing as well? Emily, having received this blessing, we now extend our hands outward to bless this community and beyond, giving what has been received, sending this energy, this love, this blessing out into the world. Amen. Blessed be. Namaste. And may it be so.
I am honored to be serving as Emily's mentor, and it's been a little over a year that I've been serving in that position, and we just met each other last night. We have been doing it long distance and on the phone, and it's been so wonderful to be here physically present to this relationship and to this beautiful occasion. Mentoring is not something that is done to Emily. I receive as much as I give. I remember my call to the ministry and renew my commitment to our faith with each conversation, each question, each insight that Emily shares with me. Ministry is not something that is done to you, the congregation. In our tradition of shared ministry, the congregation bears as much responsibility as the minister. You are in a relationship of mutual trust with Emily, with each other, and with the community outside these sheltering walls. You have walked through so much already. You have loved Emily, Ethan, and Cora through their recent loss. Continue to love them and remind Emily it's okay to be less than perfect, that there will always be work to be done, that you will do it with her. Honor your gifts. You are already committed and open to welcoming new people, change, and new ideas. You understand how to speak to each other directly when you disagree, and you have a deep sense of humor. I'm told that. I don't really know that. Emily has said that you have a deep sense of humor. Ah, there it is. Step back from leadership when you grow tired. Step up to leadership when you notice someone else is tired. By leadership, I mean the smallest, the everyday items that crowd a church's to-do list. There will always be work to be done. You have all that you need to do it. You have each other. Take risks. Ask yourselves the hard questions about financial sustainability, geographic isolation, and fear of exposure. Many of you have come to this church seeking a safe haven, a liberal oasis in a desert of painful political signs and superficial living. Our congregations are always great places for anarchists, pagans, and queer folk to hang out. Once we have loved the hell out of you, please, for the world's sake, go out and build the beloved community. You already know how to do this. After the shootings at Pulse in Orlando, it was clear that you were the only voice in this community that would discuss the issues and stand on the side of love, especially for LGBTQ people and LGBTQ people of color. I know from Emily that when you hosted a vigil for Orlando, you showed up, and three times your number showed up, creating a standing room only crowd aching for your presence. It was the people of the Permian Basin who came, who need you to continue to risk, who need you to continue to love. Your willingness to stand so publicly on the side of love and on the side of the marginalized in this seemingly homogeneous conservative community is needed again. It is needed right now. It is needed always. My charge to you is this. Love Emily. Love each other. Love your community. And remember this. There is work to do, and you have all that you need to do it right here in this room.
I was in... Hello. Can you hear me? I was in a great deal of spiritual and emotional pain. It was the early 90s. I was endeavoring to be a chaplain in the medical center in Houston. I was leaving the faith of my youth, my heritage, distancing myself from my family and my friends and my school and all that I had known. And on top of it, I had just broken up with a woman I was dating. It was all I could do to summon up any kind of strength to go minister to another. In many days, I just went through the motions. Somehow digging deep down within myself to offer even a sliver of myself, a sliver of presence. I went into my office in absolute despair. I really didn't know if I could go on. And I heard a voice. Chuck, you are more than this. And the voice spoke again emphatically. Chuck, you are more than this. Now, as ministers, our task is relational with our family, with our congregants, with our community. But yet there is a relationship even more primary than those earthly connections. One of the sacred stories that calls most deeply to me and I go back to often in the gospel is where the prophet Jesus was there in his place one night, and there came a religious professional in the deep of the night, in the dark of the night, and he said, "Hey, you got something special there, buddy. We notice you're doing a lot of great things out in the community and the world, and you know what? You seem like you're powered differently than the rest of us. What's your secret?" And he said, "Well, you have to be born from above." And the guy seemed confused. He goes, "You call yourself a religious person? You don't even understand that? Don't you know that flesh is born of flesh and spirit is born of spirit? If you're going to have the power within yourself to do the kind of work that is needed in this world, you must be born from above." And he told this beautiful thing. I know he must have known about West Texas. He said, "The wind blows wherever it pleases, and whenever it pleases, you hear its sound, but you don't know where it comes from, and you don't know where it's going." At the end of the day, Emily, we're not people of the flesh. We're invested in our relationships and our human connections. But our calling is that we are in the world, but we are not of the world. We are people called by the Spirit. And so may this wonderful West Texas spirit-driven wind, dust-driven wind, blue-norther-driven wind saturate your soul in your ministry now and until the day the last breath leaves from your body. Amen.
Phew, I have to speak after all of that. I invite you to rise in body or in spirit for the benediction and the recessional hymn. This is the sound of one voice, one spirit, one voice. And yet, if we listen closely, we can hear within it the sounds of all the voices that have shaped it. All of you have already shaped my voice. As you've let me care for you, as you have cared for me, as you have shared with me what's important to you, as we have worked together for the mission of this church and this faith, we are the sound of all of us singing with love and the will to trust. That golden bird is not one bird, but 30 birds. And the world needs us. We can do together what we could never do alone. So come, let us build that land where justice shall roll down like water and peace like an ever-flowing stream. And let us say, may it be so in one voice. May it be so. Amen. Blessed be. Namaste.